We're just knocking on the floor. All right, so my title of my talk is The Story Behind the Cue Process, and so I'm just wanting to kind of presence a moment I had a couple of weeks ago when I was doing the announcements. Dennis was gone, and so I was in the process of doing announcements, and I want to talk about what happened during the announcements because I experienced something that I want to presence. But before I get into that, I just want to just mention, for those of you who don't know what I mean by the cue process, it's our shadow work program that we have here at Unity Spiritual Center. It's a program that Jane and I and our business partner Rima Benario have created, and it's all about really excavating those aspects of our conditioned self that aren't serving us so that we can recognize that we took on limiting beliefs in our journey and we arrive at a place where we can really do some deeper healing work when we acknowledge that when our life looks and feels against us, it's really a mirror to our own disconnect. And when we're ready to really look at those parts of ourself that are really the issue with respect to what's going on in our life, our own sense of not enough, our own inadequacy, our own unworthiness, whatever we call those aspects of ourself, limiting beliefs is one way to talk about those things. When they are running us without our permission or when we're unconscious, they create conditions in our life that have a felt sense, and that feeling is uncomfortable. And so we translate any discomfort in our life as being, oh, here's something against us. Because if it was for us, we would feel what? Good, right? But because we have experiences that don't feel good, we sense that, oh, if I don't feel good, it must be against me. So we know because that the reality is that when our life looks and feels against us, it's not the situation that is against us, but what's arising, what's being mirrored in us is our own disconnect. So the cue process helps us work through that, and I mentioned that for the new people here. How many of you have already been through the cue process? As you can see, many people in our church do, because this is sort of our way. This is, if you journey with us for any length of time, you'll be drawn into the cue process. Well, back to the last couple weeks ago, I did the announcements. I tried to follow Dennis's fantastic legacy of performing and making it funny, and so I decided I'd share a story about why I don't do special services such as weddings or memorials or christenings, because I have a problem. I manifest a kind of anxiety when I have to read something, and so I inadvertently embarrass myself and others if I subject people to that experience. And I mentioned last time that it was connected to an experience I had way in my past when I didn't get into Stephen's reading group. And that's code for, many of you understood that, you chuckled, that's code for you understanding that I'm talking about an early childhood experience where I had an experience that basically led me to believe that I was not capable of reading in public, basically. So suffice to say that I mentioned that, and then I manifested the very anxiety that I was trying to explain. This is why I don't do weddings and funerals and christenings, because this is what happens to me. And so everybody laughed, and I explained what happened in one particular moment when I was doing a wedding ceremony. Well, let me just replay the moment. How does that sound, rather than me trying to describe it? So as a segue to calling David up, who is going to share a bit about his rites of passage service that's upcoming. So from the very beginning, I've always been nervous reading. That's why I've committed most of everything I have to say to memory. And so this is why, because I have difficulty, and I wasn't accepted into Stephen's reading group, which is why. Sort of my cue process story. Anyway. And if you have quarrels that push you, may you often say I love you and take no notice of small faults. And if you have quarrels that push you apart. Okay, so the two lines, and may you not, excuse me, and may you, I know I'm having
trouble even seeing. May you take no notice of small faults. And then the next line is, if you have quarrels that push you apart. And so here I'm trying to be present to the newlyweds, and here I'm trying to read a line ahead, and here I'm saying, and may you look for things to praise and often say I love you, and take no notice of small farts. And so the groom looks at me. So after that, I stopped doing
All right, so so that little story was fun, and I just before I leave that, just so you know that in the Simmons family, we take no notice of small farts. It's a secret to the longevity of our relationship. So as I attempt to try to dive into the origins of the cue process, the story behind it, it really is looking at some of my transformative experiences that I have to share, and it's a challenge for me to talk about my story. I can talk about all these principles and it just rolls out, but when I start talking about my own personal life, there's circuitry that is kind of I have to kind of work with to be able to kind of manage it. So hang in there with me. So I'm going to start 30 years ago. 30 years ago, I was in my third ministry. I've pioneered three churches. And just so you know that whenever a minister moves from one church to the next, there's a reason. That's all I'm going to say. I'm in my third church, okay? And I've pioneered this church in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I was there 12 years, and that ministry witnessed their minister go through three marriages and two divorces, and one spouse who passed on. So they were able pretty much to manage the high intensity of my life experience, because most of my adult mistakes were made in the profession of my ministry, in the context of people kind of watching me. And so I've sort of grown up in this awareness that in part my embarrassing moments are teaching moments for my community. And so it's like I'm taking one for the team, so to speak. So I'm 68 years old, and I can now talk about my past experience and all the mistakes I've made and not feel embarrassed at all right now. But so I'm just... So as I talk about what's going on for me, just know that I'm over it, and so there's no need to kind of, my minister's gone through this terrible thing. No, all that stuff has been really important. So I was in my third ministry, and I was in Fayetteville, Arkansas. I had a very progressive community. We had about 100 folks, It was my occasion as a senior minister to have requests. People would come and say, I want to do my workshop at your church. And this happens all the time. Jane and I get requests, probably 30 or 40 requests a year for somebody to come and want to work our community and then take your money and move on. So we insulate you from all that, but from time to time, we want people to come because they have a transformative message and experience. So I hosted three Hindu Jyotish astrologers called Jyotish monks. Jyotish is a Hindu term which translated means science of light, and it's a form of astrology. We have our Western astrology, and then there's the Jyotish or Hindu astrological process. They're quite different. And if you depend upon who you argue with, one is better than the other. But suffice to say that these folks from India came to my little church in Fayetteville, Arkansas, spoke through an interpreter to my congregation, and then offered to do readings for people in my church. And they gave me a free reading because I hosted the event, which I appreciated. And so they sit down and they basically tell the story of my life with very little information from me. I didn't provide them with my birthday or sign or anything like that. They just asked me to give them five experiences that I've had in my life, and they were able to basically create a whole picture of what has happened and then tell me about my future. But the point of that meeting was, is, and then they changed and spoke in English and said to me, like, right, like this, your purpose is to prove that there's nothing and no one against you. That's where it came from. That's right. And I got goosebumps right now. So the point is that, so that's when it happened. And at that moment, in that moment, I got to tell you, it was a come to Jesus moment for me, because here I was, a Unity minister, and every Sunday as we speak, there's only one presence and one power active in my life and in the universe, God the good, and then there are the exceptions. And so these folks were telling me, you have no more exceptions. You don't have an exception anymore. And so at that moment, I had to decide whether or not I could continue in ministry. Because I realized that while we would say that every Sunday at our church back there, back then, in the late 90s or 80s, I forget when, but the point is that even us as ministers and my colleagues, we had our exceptions. We allowed ourselves to have exceptions. I had board presidents as exceptions. I had congregants as an exception. I had people in my life, my family, my kids, my parents. All I could have all kinds of exceptions. That's not God going on. Those people are against me, and I had proof. I just had to look at my life and look at what I was carrying with me as my proof. But the point is that there was a moment in my life where I had to decide whether or not I was really going to walk this talk and be in integrity with what we're teaching and with what we're practicing. And for me, it was one of those moments where I said yes to the journey of demonstrating to my inmost self that it's all always for me. And so the Q process was birthed out of that intent to find a way to reconcile all the evidence that is available and comes into us without our permission, all the evidence that says we're less than, we're not good enough, that we're separate. And so it became my path to look at my own exceptions and then reconcile them in the context of the principles that we espouse. Because either our principles are correct or my experience of my reality is based upon conditions that aren't the truth of me. And so that launched the journey. And in my process of then moving forward with dealing with all these people that still energetically I had against me, now I had to redefine how I'm going to be with everything that I was having in my life. So that was the first thing that happened. And then several years later, I got into building airplanes, and this is a picture of my first airplane. It took 8 years to build from scratch, from plans. I cut every single piece of aluminum, drilled 100,000 little holes, and riveted each one by hand with a hand rivet. That's before I knew that there were pneumatic rivet guns. And anyway, the point is that I had this hobby, and there's a little garage door, and I went to close the garage door in the middle of, after I was done, I reached my hands up, and it was those levered metal garage doors, and I went like this, and crushed my fingertips. Crushed them. And in that moment, I entered into a different dimension. I had instant life review. I saw all of my relationships. Imagine seeing all the relationships you've ever had in your whole life. Let me ask you this question. How many of you have ever failed in a relationship? How many of you ever failed in more than five relationships? Six, 10, 20? The point is that we're serial relationship killers. Well, I mean, it's not, that's not our plan. We never intend to create baggage in relationships. I mean, think about the last time you got excited about a relationship. You didn't go, I'll give it 3 weeks. No, you go all in on a relationship, and then your assumption is that it's all going to work out, but then life happens and it doesn't. So I experienced a bearing witness of all the ways in which, had I been connected to who and what I've come here to be, really known my worth, I could have been in an ending. I'm not saying that all relationships are meant to last forever, but the point is that when we end a relationship, we take on baggage. The point I'm trying to make is that I saw, had I been connected to the truth of who I am, I could have been in that ending and not taken on baggage. And my co-conspirator could have also had the experience of not taking on the hurt that came from me. And so I created a process called day-by-day reconciliation. I was attending Burlington College in Vermont, my undergraduate degree in transpersonal psychology. And I was studying near-death experiences. And as you may recall, when someone has a near-death experience, they often have a past life review. And if given the gift of coming back, their life is often transformed. They come back with a renewed purpose, with no fear of death. But yet they come back changed and know that they're here to make a difference. And so I imagined for myself, what if I created this experience of knowing that tomorrow isn't promised to me, it's a gift unto me. And so if I'm given the gift of tomorrow, what would I commit to doing to reconcile with what I have created that has separated from me or somebody else from the dimension of oneself that is pure love and understanding and forgiveness? And so I decided that I would mimic what would happen every night if I was to have a near-death experience, but yet promised if I was given the gift of tomorrow, what would I do to make amends, to restore the balance, to take some authentic action that would bring me into a kind of completion or reconciliation with all these people who came to me in this momentary vision of having my fingers crushed. And I got to tell you, I created this day-by-day reconciliation process over 21 days that began another level of transformation for me. Not only did I see that I myself is the party that's responsible for having my life against me, but I also saw the power of what happens when you take authentic action to resolve or to restore something that has been long-standing and needing attention. You know what I'm talking about, right? We all have those aspects of ourselves that are waiting for our presence, waiting for our attention. And so I decided that I had to just do this, and that gave birth to the 21-day...
What happened to your fingers? They
were busted, and so I'll talk more about that later. Okay. All right. So if you recall, for those of you who are familiar with the Q process, there's 21 days in that one as well. So the day-by-day reconciliation process that I created for myself then became embedded in what you experienced as the Q process, phase one and phase two, the Q process. So that gives you a sense of where authentic action and taking ownership of what one has created, that now one has to own, even the crap that one has created. You have to own it all in order to get back your power. Because in owning it all, it's not like you say, okay, this is how it is, but this is what you're going to make of it. You're going to make it for you, and you're going to make it bless you and not release it until that's your experience. So the next thing I wanted to share goes to another experience I had. So as I mentioned before, my previous wife, Nan, had died of brain cancer. And that's why I chose a different route for my cancer, because based upon my experience with her and that ordeal and being her caregiver and knowing that I would never subject my caregiver to the same experience. So I'm going to share now what happened after she passed, and that is I ate something that I was allergic to, and I went in anaphylactic shock. And I was at a place where I could not receive any medical attention, and so I was having my own near-death experience in that moment, and feeling welcoming it because my life partner passed. And so in the throes of my own bereavement, I was wanting to follow her. I was craving to be released from the discomfort of my own bereavement and loss. But her voice said, no, you have work to do. And then a different voice, a voice that is as clear and as profound as the sound of my voice is right now, that says, Gary, you are the one to bring peace on earth. I've shared this story, and my reaction is, as I mentioned, you know, what's up with that? You know, I mean, it's like, wait a minute, not signing up for this. I mean, it's fine for me not recovering from this suffocating to death thing, but to be the one? And so I discovered within myself, even in that experience, as I recall, I was also not only a minister of a church, but I was director of peacemaking services for the entire Unity Movement. And here I was pushing away the voice that I'm the one. And you see, this is our universal challenge, is that there is the voice. Each one of us, the voice is beckoning us. You are the one. You are the one. And if we push away the voice based upon our evidence, based upon our story, based upon all the things that are in our way, then we push away the very mechanism that life is trying to bring forth that serves a greater good. And so here I was in this experience of trying to reconcile this voice that I heard, and so I just decided to test it. Okay, I'm the one. What's next? There's no owner's manual. No, you don't know how to be the one. And at the same time, you're never the one all by yourself, really. But you have to be willing to be able to own it all first before you get the next piece. And so I was in that moment, once again, guts for brains. That's how I am as a test pilot. That's how I am in my own spiritual journey, guts for brains. So I said, okay, I'm the one. I don't know what's next. I just know that that's the next step for me. I'm the one. Okay, well, the next day, I get a phone call, and the guy identifies himself as the executive director of the Omni Center for Peace, Justice, and Ecology. And he's calling me, asking me, because I'm the director of peacemaking services for the Unity Movement, what is Unity's stand with respect to the impending war on Iraq? So in other words, we're just about ready to go to war in Iraq after 9/11. And so they're wanting me to tell them and therefore convey to their principals what our position is. And I said on the phone, these words came out of my mouth, Unity takes no stands, has no position regarding the impending war. And I hung up the phone and I got sick to my stomach. I felt a sense of loss for what could become a kind of sense of what our place is in this world, and that is if we who have, this is a story I'm making up about it, the most profound transformative teaching on the planet, if we're not participating in the conversations as to whether or not we're still going to use war as a means of protecting ourselves from what looks and feels against us, what hope is there? And if we can't, as a unit community, be a force for peace in this world, what hope is there? And so as I placed myself in that awareness, I looked around. You know, it's like nowadays you're wondering, well, who's going to call it out? Who's going to name the elephant in the room? And so I contacted the leadership of the Unity Movement and said to them, where's our voice? Are we just going to let this country go to war without participating in the conversation? And so you know what happens when you're the one that complains. So they said, okay, well, give us something to go start with. I didn't know what our position should be. I just knew that there was something out of integrity with a movement such as ours not taking a stand. And this is before it was fashionable. And so I just said, okay, I'll give it a stab. And I sent off a couple of statements, and they replied back, and they said they loved them both. They adopted one. And actually, Claire Austin, who was the senior minister of this ministry a couple of ministers ago, David McClure, and then Claire Austin was here for 12 years. She was the board chair at the time. And so it's interesting how things come full circle. And so the position statement that Unity adopted is a statement that we recite every Sunday. Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors many names for God, the many paths to God, the many ways of worshiping God, for we know that there's only one power and one presence that is God, and that God loves us all equally. And so, you know, the rest of the position statement declares that we understand that this is our struggle now, but if we cannot affirm the presence of God and offer ourselves in the sense of giving into that presence as being a higher principle, and if we don't be in the struggle of trying to reconcile those things that need to be reconciled, then we're just giving into this is just the way. And so as that event happened in my life, it taught me that we can't be complacent if we want to transform this world. If you're called to be a part of the transformation of this planet, you can't sit by and just watch it happen. You have to engage it. And so part of the Q process has an engagement piece that really means is that you have to restore the balance. And you start learning how to do that with the paper cuts in your life, not the big things. And then when you get to the big things, then it really matters that you understand what the work is. So, but I wanted to kind of trace this back before I leave this story and just basically say that every child that's born into this world knows that they're the one. Every child, all those kids that come up here after services, they know that they're the one already. We have to beat it out of them. Literally, we have to kind of extract that notion out of their heads. Because to think that you're the one means that you don't have to always live by the rules. To think that you're the one means that you can come up with stuff that no one's ever thought about and be able to do things that nobody else can do. There's a consequence to our not fostering this intentionality that is seeking to live through the youth of our human family. And so as we see these young people being the one unto their own life, let us also know that they're in danger of us conditioning them to think of themselves as less than that. So we have work to do. And let's get back to Stephen's reading group because we gotta be done with this story. So, as I mentioned, back when I was 6 or 7 years old, you know, I'm coming back to school after my first. I loved school. I loved everything about it. And most of what I loved about it were my friends. And then to find out that I didn't get into my best friend's reading group, you know, it impacted me. And you got to know that. Little Gary was quite an emotional kid. I would cry at a drop of a hat. And if you've ever heard this from a parent, you probably had a similar experience. Have you ever heard, "I'll give you something to cry about"? Oh yeah. So the point is that all of us grow up in conditions and circumstances where our parents aren't Mary and Joseph. They don't know that they've been given the Christ child. Really? And they don't know that one, we're dropped on the ground and we hit our head, that we kind of are different because of that. And so who knows what happens when a child has said, "You can't go into this group because you're slow. You can't go in this group because you can't keep up." And so a little child takes on a belief about themselves. They don't understand the conditions or circumstances. And so I can sort of pinpoint that moment when little Gary took on this belief that he wasn't enough, good enough. But yet, what we don't understand is that the legacy that that moment creates. Not only does Gary grow up not really having a love for reading, but he avoids books. And that's a problem when you want to become educated. And that's a problem when you want to get an academic doctoral degree. And so I have successfully acquired both a bachelor's of arts and a doctoral degree and done a dissertation without reading. Wait a minute, I'm not bragging. You don't want to go this path. I mean, it's not that I don't read, it's just that I'm not drawn to it as something that is like Jane's companion. Jane has literally 15 books constantly greeting her in every single room of the house like a welcoming friend. I don't learn that way. But I have compensated. As I've mentioned, I compensate not reading in public because I can memorize things easily. And so I can quote scripture. I don't have to use notes. I've had to compensate for this. It's not a choice that I wanted to make. And I've been able to see how that simple belief and the inability to really enjoy reading has affected all aspects of my adult life. Because here's the thing, and I can close with this. And that is that when I was 19 years old, I was in between going to college, San Jose State, and working for the phone company. And it was my first job where I had to take a physical in order to be employed, and I received an eye exam. And I learned at that time, 19 years old, that I was farsighted. In other words, I could see perfectly like I do right now. But at the time, I couldn't see clearly as I would try to read, to learn how to read. And so I was slow because I was trying to learn how to manage the act of just seeing the page. And so consequently, not only had I been able to correct my vision at that young age, could I have then seen, but it caused me to avoid any fine print in my life. Imagine avoiding all fine print in your life. And now imagine, how do you become competent in dealing with your finances, your obligations, your responsibilities, your taxes? So consequently, I built up this whole pattern in my life where I accumulated debts and liabilities associated with mine, just not able to pay attention to the details of my life, because that's what I took on because of not getting into Stephen's reading group. And so the whole point of the Q process is we have to flip it. How can I flip that story so that little Gary can be reparented, so little Gary is no longer active in my own unconscious mind, creating circumstances where I'm going to avoid details, or I'm going to skim over the facts of my life. And so I have made up a different story about this. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Well, Stephen didn't get in my reading group. God bless you.
Awesome. Well, as Dr. Gary just stated and was guided to create for the Unity Movement, Unity stands for peace in the presence of conflict, for love in the presence of hatred, for forgiveness in the presence of injury. Unity honors the many names for God, the many paths to God, for we know there is only one power, one presence, one life. So whoever you are and wherever you are in your journey of transformation, you are welcome here. We would especially like to welcome anyone here for the very first time. If this is your first time visiting with us and you feel comfortable raising your hand, our ushers have a gift packet to give you. Is anyone here for the first time? Quite a few. Cool. Yay. So we're asked.